This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota studios. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Patrick. How was your Thanksgiving, Patrick? First time seeing you since the holiday. How did it go?
It was a very busy weekend, so it was very nice to have a quiet day yesterday. But everything went nice. It was like the dinner scene looked like something out of a movie. The turkey at the center of the nice dinner table with food kind of on the sides for the buffet.
Nice Norman Rockwell kind of image going on there.
Yeah, it was so nice. I actually had to snap a couple of photos of it, and I'm like, this is like something out of a movie.
Well, share those. Let's get those up on the... Can you share them on AM950?
I can see what I can do.
Are you harboring any criminals in your household? So we can't show the pictures of the... We can blot the faces. Don't worry. We'll blot everyone's face, okay?
I took the pictures before anybody came into the dining room, so... I prefer my pictures without people in them.
Yeah, when your holiday pictures are all blurred out or they've got the black line disguising them, you know you're having a fun holiday party. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. What were you busy doing running around catching?
I did hockey games in Minnetonka Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon. Then I had hockey at Braemar Arena on Sunday afternoon before the Vikings game, which did not make me happy.
Well, I got news for you. It generally doesn't. It generally doesn't. A lot of things to get to today, including of course Brett Johnson going to stop on by. We're going to do an interview with him. I've got to get some stuff on the Foo Fighters and that. Does that they're coming in concert or are they? We'll find out here. We'll talk about that. I want to say thank you very much. I got a lovely little gift here from I think it's a Cherish. Ecumenical Catholic community here in Eden Prairie. Now, once again, if you've not known, I have been traditionally a Catholic. When the Conference of Catholic Bishops decided to basically go after Joe Biden in a political attack, which they did, they keep insisting it was not political, but as they had their conference to basically condemn Joe Biden because he was the Democratic president and... But, you know, let's make sure we understand this. A lot of this was coming from the money people behind the Catholic Church, the people that make a lot of donations to the Catholic Church. They wanted the archbishops to basically and the bishops and the archbishops to basically condemn him and, try to take one of his strengths, which is his Catholic faith, and turn it as a weapon against him. It's pure Rovian politics. I mean, it's pure Rovian politics. And the Catholic Church, because I guess they were more concerned about political power than anything else, quickly went along with it. Well, and they said this is not about anyone in particular, but then they would run out to the media and say, well, in my congregation, they're all upset about Joe Biden. Joe Biden, I mean, they were going to the media and saying Joe Biden by name and then going in and saying, but we're not saying who. It was clear what they were doing. And it was kind of stupid, too. If I can be so blunt, it's really stupid of the Catholic bishops to do this because Joe Biden then ends up becoming the second most powerful person on the planet for them. I mean, outside of the Pope, then the President of the United States is Catholic. I mean, you've got a lot of power there. And instead, they decided to basically just do the Republicans' bidding because, yeah, stupidity. Needless to say, that was it for me. And I'm not saying, trust me, I had a lot of soul searching during the whole the crises the church has been through. It was something that finally enough is enough. And you know, after we basically gave the church another chance after the child sex scandal, for them to basically come on out and say now we're going to just be hyper political, that was enough for us. So I've started going around and I've gone to some wonderful churches. And variety of faiths. Last few weeks, I've been enjoying the Lutherans over at Westwood. A very nice church. Lovely church, as a matter of fact, and some amazing singing. I always do like the organ because it reminds me of Davy and Goliath cartoons. You know, but, you know, that's just me. But I want to give Charis here. This is Charis, the Prairie Lutheran Church in Blossom Road in Eden Prairie here. They sent me lovely Advent candles. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. As a matter of fact, we were just noticing. I don't know what's up with the Lutherans, but the Catholic Advent candles, there's always one that's a different color. The third week is a different color. They don't do that in the Lutheran. They're all the same color in the Lutheran church. Oh, religion, you've got so many quirks and turns. Anywho, thank you very much. That's a lovely gesture. I really appreciate it. Charis, Ecumenical Catholic Community at Prairie Lutheran Church, Blossom Road, Eden Prairie. Thank you. Still going around. We'll still make it. Like I said, it's a very personal thing for me because you want to, you know, it's about faith. And this was hard. My problem was not with my church or my priests. They were fantastic. Father Mike and the church I was at, Pax Christi, was wonderful. It's this decision that you're just going to become this hyper-political organization. And for what? What are you doing? Do you think that anyone who's Baptist is going to, you know, stop being Baptist and all of a sudden, oh, I guess I'm going to be a Catholic now? No. No one's going to do that. I have heard some stories that when the Conference of Catholic Bishops did this, some of the churches saw a dramatic decrease in attendance. And I think that there's something going on with that because ever since they started this little dog and pony show, the clown car brigade, they've all of a sudden gotten real quiet about it. They're not sharing too much more about that. So, but I appreciate that. It's interesting because there's some things I notice that no matter what denomination of church I'm in, I still kind of do the Catholic thing sometimes. And so it's a personal journey. And I'll keep sharing with you. And like I said, this is a very lovely option, offer here for you from you guys at Charis. So thank you very much. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A lot of things, like I said, to get to today. I will get to yet the predictable and, you know, what we've come to expect now is the standard shooting at a school where we have at least three dead at this point. The last count was you had six injured, including a teacher. I'll give you an update on that in a second. I will say we talked yesterday about the CNN story about the woman who was a Republican, who had been Republican, kind of broke a little bit from the Republican Party because of her feeling on LGBTQ issues, but still seemed to be kind of in that moderate Republican vein. She was running for the school board, but because she was not one of these howler monkeys from the far right, she was attacked by the far right in Hastings, the suburban community out in the southeast side of town, and was basically had her 8-year-old transgender daughter, Kit, outed in the political season as fair game and was accused of a lot of horrible, horrible things by this private Facebook group that wanted to basically, you know, like I said, be private and say all these things, but were clearly directing a lot of things. So I made the comment yesterday, well, since you guys want to out 8-year-olds in Hastings, I'd sure love to know the names of all the people who are part of this private Facebook group. And boy, have you delivered. Now, I'm not going to say any names because I need to clarify. I'm going to actually follow up with these people and give them a ring-a-ding-ding at their house in Hastings and say, hey, are you part of this group? To find out if they really were. But a lot of people are outing that group right now. There is a lot of people who are outing that group. Thank you. Let the outing continue. Let me know the names of the people that are in that group, because I'd sure love to know the people that decided outing an 8-year-old child was something they were proud to do. And I have zero doubt these clowns, speaking of religion, like to think they're Christian. Oh, I bet you they think we're the most Christian people ever. Oh, God, you guys, it couldn't be further from the truth. Oh, man. Wow, you have missed a lot of what Jesus was all about. I know. You need to go back. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You should read those. Don't focus on those secondary books that tell you about wealth is good. No. No, you need to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Those are the books. You need to follow them, you know. Taking care of people, loving each other, welcoming in people, you know, the basics. Anywho, you need to go revisit that because I think your Bible doesn't have any of that in there. Just saying. Anywho, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Three people believed to be students were killed during a shootout on Tuesday in Oxford High School in Oakland County, Michigan. This is outside Detroit. They said one story said it was an hour outside of Detroit, north of Detroit. Another said it's 30 miles, so it's kind of on the north side. One suspect is in custody, a 15-year-old male who is a sophomore at the school. Oakland County Undersheriff Michael McCabe said at a press conference. Six others were injured in the shooting, including at least one teacher. A handgun was recovered from the scene, according to the Oakland County Sheriff's Office, who responded to the shooting around 1 p.m. The shooting lasted about 5 minutes. Per McCabe. The school was placed on lockdown. Parents were asked to pick up children. Pray for our families and our students. School Superintendent Tim Thorne said at a press conference, I'm shocked and devastated. The student, who is the suspect shooter, fired an estimated 15 to 20 rounds and did not give resistance when officers came to put him into custody, as per McCabe. Officials will provide more information on victims later in the day. It's a very tragic situation, McCabe said, adding that there were a lot of upset parents. You never want to prepare for something like this, but you have to. Do you? Seriously, I'm going to get back to that. Do you have to? Because there's a lot of countries that this just does not happen in. It just does not. And sure, there's occasional violence that happens, but it's not the epidemic of gun violence we have in this country. The problem here is this, is that we've resigned ourselves that this is the way it has to be. We just have to sacrifice 30 or 40 students every year to the great gun gods because, God forbid, we actually, I don't know, want to stop children from being gunned down in school. I know, wacky, crazy liberal stuff. But we could do that. I mean, we could. As opposed to sacrifice 30 to 40 kids every single year to the gun gods, maybe, just maybe, we rein in the guns, we prevent guns from being used willy-nilly by just anyone, and we don't have dead kids. I know, it seems like this is a real progressive idea, that we actually don't shoot the children in our schools. I know. But when you say to me, you never want to have to prepare for something like this, but you have to. No, you don't have to. We could actually fix this problem pretty quickly if we wanted to. We just choose not to. Because we have decided that sacrificing 30 to 40 kids every year to the gun gods is more important than keeping those children alive. It's true. That's a fact. I also want to point out the shooting lasted about 5 minutes. No one could stop this guy, this kid, 15-year-old kid. No one could stop him. 5 minutes, three dead, six injured. Don't know how serious any of those other injuries are. Sounds like this 15-year-old was specifically targeting someone. That's by the sounds of the story. 5 minutes. So, what are we supposed to do, gun nuts? What are we supposed to do? I know your fantasy world, gun kooks, is that we walk around with guns drawn, rounds in the chamber, and a full magazine, safety off, finger on the trigger, pointing at everyone and everything in case something happens. But the vast majority of us don't want to live in the zombie apocalypse world that you guys fantasize about. You're not going to put gun turrets outside of every school. You're not going to put you know, 16 layers of security at every elementary school in the country. We already went through that when you clowns decided that Newtown wasn't that bad of a deal, but it was. Nope, 5 minutes. Not much you could do. Because the gun is that lethal. I have no problem saying if this kid had a knife, we probably wouldn't have 3 dead kids. We probably wouldn't have 6 injured kids. If this guy had a bow and arrow, we probably would not have 3 dead kids. And we probably would not have 6 injured kids. Or I should say not kids, but you know, injured people. It sounds like at least one teacher was injured. If he had a hammer, we probably would not have 3 dead people and we wouldn't have 6 injured people. Pick your so-called, well, you get when someone takes an axe. If the guy had an axe, probably would not have 3 dead people and 6 injured people. Probably wouldn't. What makes these crimes as devastating as they are is the gun. It is a weapon that is designed to kill human beings as quickly as possible. I can tell you that because I was in the Army. Uh-huh. That's what guns are designed for. Now, he doesn't sound like he had a hunting weapon, a shotgun. Sounds like it was a handgun with 15 to 20 rounds. Jesus. When I was in the military, we didn't have clips. We didn't have the banana clips that had. We had like 12 rounds in the gun on our M16s back then. 15-year-olds walking around with a handgun with 20 rounds in the chamber, not knowing if he has another reload on him. 5 minutes. 5 minutes. No, there's nothing you can do to stop this outside of take the guns out of the hands of these people. And it's about damn time we did it. Because you know what? I am tired of the argument that we have to sacrifice 30 to 40, 12 to 18-year-olds every year to the gun gods just because we are too cowardice to actually go on out there and fix this problem. But here we are. As Republicans quickly scramble and say, now's not the time to talk about this. Shut up. You did this. You and your gun god worshiping. You did this. All of you. Your gun rights could be fully intact, and we could have some common sense regulations in place that prevent stuff like this from happening. But you guys say no because you are fantasizing about the zombie apocalypse world where you run around with guns all the time and act like that's some sort of sane solution. It's your world, not mine. And no, I'm not comfortable with the gun kooks idea that we just have to sacrifice 30 to 40, 12 to 18-year-olds every single year. Or God forbid, we have another Newtown where first graders are gunned down in a school as teachers frantically try to save their lives. We could solve this because most countries don't have this problem. So we could solve this. We just choose not to because for these people, worshiping their gun god is far more important than saving the lives of 30 to 40 children every single year. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Just another tragedy in America. Another tragedy in America. Can't wait. Is it going to be Marjorie Taylor Greene or is it going to be Madison Cawthorn who basically come on out with their, you know, holding a picture of a gun 20 minutes after this saying, I love my gun. Which one of them? Clowns. They're all clowns. And none of them should have a gun. Because they don't understand what exactly they have in their hands. Because if they did, they sure as hell wouldn't treat it as like a freaking party favor. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll change it up into something else here in the next segment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. We'll be right back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 15 years old, 5 minutes, 3 dead, 6 injured. Wow. And it's like everyone all of a sudden, wow, guns are dangerous. Oh, but we're not going to do anything to stop them. I don't know what to do. You know, it's just, we know we can solve this problem. We just choose not to. The gun gods are far more important than the lives of our children. It's just that simple. A note from the DFL party today: in response to recent reporting about Republican State Senator Roger Chamberlain's online extremism, the DFL party is calling on the Senate Republican leadership to break their unacceptable silence and address Chamberlain's disturbing and deranged behavior. The Senate Republican Assistant Majority Leader has a long, underreported history of white supremacist activity online. Here's where I'm going to contradict you. No, it's been reported. It's just the media in this town doesn't seem to care. They give him a pass on that. That's for sure. Recently, Chamberlain liked a social media post saying, "Retweet if you're pure blood," a reference to eugenist beliefs about racial purity. This is just the latest example of Chamberlain's far-right extremism and white nationalist activity online. Let's not mince words. Republican Senator Roger Chamberlain is a fascist-sympathizing white nationalist, said DFL party chairman Ken Martin. Okay, can I say this? About damn time. Welcome to the party, pal. I'm glad to see we are at the point where we can label these people effectively. Chamberlain has repeatedly promoted a dangerous fascist manifesto, followed neo-Nazis on Twitter, and frequently engages with white nationalist content. A political extremist like Chamberlain has no business in public office at all, let alone serving as a state Republican's assistant majority leader. We should also remind her, he was accused of making the white power hand gesture, I believe on the Senate floor. I believe it was on the Senate floor. And then as well, you remember there were multiple times where the Democrats in the Senate said, hey, maybe we shouldn't have KKK members and Nazis and white supremacists as police officers in Minnesota. And Chamberlain and the rest of the Republican Party said, nope, they're fine with that. And they've not done a thing to fix it. It's past time that Senate Leader Jeremy Miller and Chamberlain's other Republican colleagues take his extremism seriously, address it publicly, and sanction Chamberlain for his dangerous actions, added Martin. You're expecting that Republicans to have actually some standards and dignity? Oh, come on, Ken. You lost me there. Silence from Chamberlain's fellow Republicans is nothing short of complicity in his dangerous obsession with white nationalism. The one time that Roger Chamberlain was asked about his white supremacist activity online, he repeatedly lied and distorted the truth. The DFL party corrected the record. There's a link to that, which would serve as a useful resource for those looking into questions about Chamberlain and his future. Let's go and do this here. It's a video that they put out there. I'm not gonna follow that per se. But you got a little bit of integrity there, a little spine going after, God forbid we go after a clown like Chamberlain. Like I said, how many times, and my God, he put out the lamest excuse ever when he said, budget bills are not for policy. Sweet Jesus, look at Republican budget bills, chock full of policy issues, chock full of them. But now all of a sudden, how dare we violate the integrity of a budget bill? Oh, shut up. You just didn't want to outlaw the KKK, Nazis, and white supremacists from being cops in Minnesota. What a brave stand there, Chamberlain, and the rest of the Republican Party of Minnesota. You see, the problem is I like you going after them. And to a point, I think it's, you know, I understand you asking for some sort of comment from the Republicans, but they're not going to say anything. Because the reality is they need the Nazis and the KKK and the racists to vote for them so they stay in office. So, you know, nothing. We're not going to say a thing at all. It's just the way it is. Bob is in Minneapolis, wanted to chime in. Hey, Bob, thanks for holding.
Hey, yeah, I was just curious if you ever took a peek outside the Christian flavor of religions, like Buddhism or Hinduism, Jainism, anything like that?
We actually had a discussion about this, this was right before my hip replacement surgery, because I haven't gone to too many church services in the last 6 weeks. But we did talk a little bit about, exploring some other faiths and doing this and seeing what it's like and going to a synagogue, maybe going to a mosque, maybe going to some of these other ones. So no, it's definitely on our agenda. It's been very interesting for us to go in to just the very into different Catholic or different Christian churches and see the wide how church services vary from church to church. And the reality is that some of these services are so different from other services. I don't know if it's necessarily, and this is part of the discussion we had, is it necessarily, too out of line for us to actually look at other faiths? Not necessarily at all. So, Bob, we probably will at some point get into to checking out some other religions. All right. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Coming up here in a little bit, Brett's going to be talking with Dr. Rebecca Wirtz with the University of Minnesota. Going to talk about state COVID data and Omicron. So we'll get you the latest on that coming up here. That's with Brett Johnson after the top of the hour here at 5, right here on AM 950. The Minnesota Coronavirus Update is where we're going next. Tuesday's COVID update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 12,632 newly reported cases. Now, reminder, this is including a lot of holiday days and weekend days in there. So that's why that number is so high. The state didn't process any deaths between November 25th and 26th for the Thanksgiving holiday, so no new deaths were reported today. Expect that number to be fairly high tomorrow. Minnesota's test positivity rate on the seven-day rolling average is 10.6%, which is down from 10.9% on November 19th. Anything over 10, though, puts Minnesota in the high-risk threshold for community transmission of the coronavirus. So, it should be noted that the Delta variant is the dominant strain circulating in Minnesota. The newly discovered Omicron variant has not yet been even detected in the United States. So it's one thing to make sure we keep in check and keep in the facts on things. As of November 28th, the state reported that 3,647,141 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,358,839 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 1,093,281 third dose booster shots. Through November 29th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota, it's now at 1,532. That's up from 1,467 reported on the 26th. Of those hospitalized, 343 people are in intensive care. That's up from 340 total. And 1,189 are in non-ICU care. That's up from 1,127. The most ICU patients during the duration of the pandemic was 399. And once again, we are slowly but surely climbing up to that number. By the way, that 399 number was December 1st, 2020. There are currently only 27 staffed adult ICU beds available in the entire state, down from 34 on November 26th. 16 pediatric ICU beds are available, which is up from the 6 available on November 26th. Pediatric non-ICU beds are also strained, with only 34 available statewide. Total number of cases in the state of Minnesota alone, 912,370. We are going to have 1 million cases of coronavirus. A fifth of the state, a little less than a fifth of the state, is going to be sick with coronavirus by the time we're all done here, mostly because of Republicans. Think about that, because the Republicans, it was more important for them to play politics during this time than to help out and actually encourage their voters to be as healthy as possible. That's just disturbing. The intensive care units at 50 of 68 Minnesota hospitals are capable of providing critical care to patients are completely full, according to the latest data from the Minnesota Department of Health. Overall, there are enough skilled nursing staff to care for an additional 27 patients who need to be treated in ICUs in Minnesota. By the way, that should be mentioned. That's the entire state of Minnesota. How many people in the state of Minnesota have a heart attack today or a stroke or in a car crash that need to be in an ICU? The, you know, I just had a friend whose wife gave birth and there were complications. She had to be in the ICU for 3 days. Think about that. All of a sudden, you know, you go in for a procedure, you're not thinking it's going to be a problem, ends up being a problem, and they say, well, I'm sorry, there's no ICU beds. We'll just have you in the hallway here. Wow. Wow. Overall, once again, enough skilled nursing staff to care for an additional 27 patients who need to be treated in an ICU in Minnesota. The state's hospital system currently has an adult ICU capacity of 1,012, of which 985 beds are currently occupied, 35% of whom are COVID-19 patients. Wow. The grim capacity picture is partially the product of more than 1,500 COVID-19 hospitalizations in Minnesota for the first time since December 9th, when there were 1,538 patients being treated by the coronavirus. This is going to get worse, by the way, because what happened last year? Take a look at the timeline. Thanksgiving happened. We had a ton of cases, and then it started to calm down. Well, we just had Thanksgiving. We already are pretty high. We're probably going to beat our record for a hospitalization. Probably not going to have a hospital bed in the state in a few days. Probably not. There are 1,532 people with COVID-19 admitted to Minnesota hospitals, including 343 in intensive care. Adult ICU capacity is extremely limited statewide. Single-digit staff beds available in all 8 regions of the state. The capacity remains tight despite 2 teams of 22 medical professionals being sent to Minnesota by the federal government. One team is assisting St. Cloud Hospital. The others are at Hennepin County Medical Center in Minneapolis. This is a result of the rise of the Delta variant, which spreads easily from person to person, is capable of causing more severe diseases, especially among the unvaccinated. For example, 8 hospitals operated by CentraCare and Caris Health in Greater Minnesota were caring for 117 COVID-19 patients on Monday. 76% of them were unvaccinated. Wow. When visiting the CentraCare website, users are greeted by a pop-up message that essentially begs people to get vaccinated and get a booster shot. The challenge of providing this level of care is that our hospital beds are often full, ERs in all of our hospitals are packed, and our clinical team are exhausted. Early in the pandemic, our community stepped up in amazing ways to help us. We ask that you again join us to fight this pandemic together, the message reads. Sanford Health, which is based in Sioux Falls, says hospitals over the Dakotas of Minnesota was treating 219 COVID-19 patients of November 13. Only 7% were vaccinated, which means 93% of all the patients they were treating for COVID, 93% were unvaccinated. Only 3 of the 61 ICU patients were vaccinated. Only 3. That means 58 of the 61 were unvaccinated. God, I just don't know what to do with you people. I don't know what to do with you people. I mean, get vaccinated. Wear a mask. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you bankrupt. I don't. That's not a political statement. That's just a statement. I'm just making it. I don't want you dead. I don't. I don't want you sick. I don't. I don't want you bankrupt for the next 10 years. I don't. One of the things which is interesting, I'm reading from bringmethenews.com, and Bring Me the News, actually, when they put the Omicron out there and they say about Omicron, oh, it's not here in the state. The reason why I think they're putting that in there is because there's already people out there saying, keep safe from Omicron, jam this veterinary medicine up your backside and you'll be safe. There are already people out there trying to, you know, hucksters, trying to basically sucker people into, you know, quack cures. Maybe we should do our own quack cure. Maybe. You know Tide Pods? Well, you know what you need to do with those. Unzip. Yes. And no. No. Don't. No. Bad. No. Do not jam a Tide Pod up your backside. All right? It will do nothing for you. It won't even bleach you down there. So, no, don't do that. Although, I mean, how long before some Republican says, I heard somewhere where the better option for Omicron was to take a Tide Pod and, well, are you flexible? No, It does present a new angle on the old Tide Pod Challenge, doesn't it? No. I want to repeat because I already know the station owner is going to be down here saying, McNeil, clarify this, fix it. No. You cannot treat coronavirus with a Tide Pod jammed up your backside. You cannot do that. Dr. Matt's helpful tips. Get vaccinated. Wear a mask. Do not do that with a Tide Pod or any pod-like cleaning product. Do not. No, it's not going to help you. 952-946-6205. Let's get Walt in. He wanted to chime in on the tragic news of the latest gun violence happening, this time north of Detroit. Walt, thank you very much. I appreciate that you holding there.
Matt, yes, and I called in to talk about that. Of course, now I have to praise you for your work on saving lives with respect to COVID. But getting back to the gun violence, I want to thank you for expressing things better than I could. And I want to underscore that if you allow that kind of violence to go on in a country that wants to be democratic, it causes people to be fearful, and they're going to look for the strong leader that will protect them, and that's the end of our democracy. Thank you very much, Matt, for what you're doing.
Well, and that's wasn't that Trump's whole thing? Was, if you put me in, I'll keep you safe. And he had no intention of keeping you safe, but there's, see, we're just safe. One thing, if I can say, I treat this job. I had a discussion one time with Jeff Stein, who will be on the air with us tomorrow. Stein and I had a discussion, and he said it's not my job to basically give people the feeling like they have to do something, that I'm going to leave it up to them. And I said, I disagree with you wholeheartedly. I think my job here as a radio host is to get you the information. And if my bellowing, my belching of facts and numbers and stuff like this, if it convinces one or two people to get vaccinated, great. I'm glad. I feel like I accomplished something. But I want to make sure I clearly said, I don't consider what I'm doing necessarily saving lives. I'm basically making sure I give information. And if it does convince someone to do the right thing, that's it. But let's make sure we know who's doing the right thing. That's the doctors and the nurses and the scientists. They're the ones who are saving lives. They are the ones. And God bless you all. God bless you all. This has been brutal on you. And your industry is getting buckled. And the thing which I find to be interesting is this. In these rural communities, these Republican communities, where the Republicans have basically been out there saying, you know, you don't need to get vaccinated. You don't need to wear a mask. Freedom! You know, they're doing that. They know their local medical facility is broken. That basically, because the way the medical industry has set themselves up, that rural hospitals have been shut down, closed down, staff has been cut, options and treatment options have been cut at these small facilities, and they're already knowing this. And what we're going through right now is purging out so many doctors and nurses. These same Republicans in a year are going to be like, why doesn't no nurse or doctor want to come out and work in my district? We had to shut down the hospital because we couldn't get any medical people out here. Oh, I don't know. Maybe the medical people don't appreciate you basically trying to make as many people sick as possible so that they can't, they're constantly running around and frantically trying to save anyone they can. Maybe it's because you guys are so horrible at what you're doing for political reasons that you don't see the real cost to our healthcare system. I don't think that if you live in rural America, you live in rural Minnesota, that your healthcare options should be a 2-hour or a 3-hour ambulance ride where we hope you make it. Or if you're really sick, an air evac to the nearest medical facility. That has a bed. Nope. Not only are these Republicans encouraging bad science and bad, well, not science, but it's bad advice in regards to vaccines or masks. Not only are they doing that, but they're vilifying nurses and doctors. And God help you, in 3 or 4 years, when all of a sudden you're like, why are they shutting down the local hospital? Well, because you are an absolute jackass to them and none of them want to work around you. Same thing for the teachers, too. Let's be honest with you. You wonder why teachers, you can't find teachers in rural Minnesota. Well, maybe if you weren't such jackasses to them, they might want to work for you. But hey, that's just me. Terry is in Columbia Heights. Let's get Terry on in here before we go to the break. Welcome in, Terry.
Hi, Matt. First of all, thanks for your show. You do a great job.
Thank you, sir.
But I wanted to tell you, these Republicans are so stupid. Now, I've had three friends in the last 2 months that have come down with coronavirus. They're all Republicans. They all tell me they are. But they all also set the, at when I go to Croquet Net, they sit there saying how fake the vaccine is and all that. Well, the one gal that I've known that's been in the hospital longest, she went to Mayo, and she was in Mayo on a ventilator for 2.5 weeks, and she still hasn't recovered. Now, I had two other friends. One of them died on the 14th of November. We just talked to him on the 5th of November. He said, I'm not getting that crap in my body. Went in the hospital on the 7th. He died on the 14th of coronavirus. My third friend went in the hospital the last week in October. They had to put him into an induced coma. He was in an induced coma until last Tuesday, and they took him off the ventilator, and he died. These people are so stupid. I mean, there's nothing else that you can say except that they're stupid.
No, well, and they're purposely intentionally stupid. I'll give you a great example. Thank you very much, Terry, and thanks for the nice words. I appreciate it. There's this Dave Johnson who is on the watching us, which we should block him. I think he's just a troll. Matt, please tell your listeners there are more Democrats unvaccinated than Republicans. No, that's not even close to being true. There's only 10% of Democrats are not vaccinated. In Democratic areas where they voted for Joe Biden in this last election, only 10% of those people are not vaccinated versus only 40% are vaccinated out in Republican areas, places that voted for Trump. That was a story I brought up yesterday. You can go podcast the show. It's on iTunes and SoundCloud. I brought that one up. I think that was The Nation, or was that Salon? Might have been Salon that had that one. Yeah, it was Salon had that story. So it's and it's getting worse. If you are in a Republican area of this country, you have a 25 out of 100,000 chance of dying from COVID versus in Democratic areas of this country, seven. It's more than three times more in Republican areas. So, no, seriously, I'm not going to allow you to just make up crap and then act like you're clever. Stupid people, Dave, stupid people shouldn't pretend to be clever. It blows up in your face. And read something besides right-wing talking points, will you clown? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. There's your freaking crickets. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Don't challenge me on something. We just talked about those numbers yesterday, for goodness sakes. One final thing here, and I did post this story earlier today. It's something that we have to come to grips with. In October, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the Children's Hospital Association declared a national state of emergency in child and adolescent mental health and called on policymakers to join them. In a joint statement, they said, even before the pandemic, mental health challenges facing children were a great concern, and COVID-19 has exasperated them. We have children boarding and emergency rooms for days and weeks waiting for an inpatient bed, said Sue Aberholden, executive director of NAMI Minnesota. So a need is great. Frankly, it's getting worse. The need is something Children's Minnesota saw, saying in part of the shortage of child and adolescent psychiatrists alone has been a barrier of expanding mental health care for many systems, including its own. That's why they're opening their first inpatient mental health center in St. Paul in 2022 to support kids 18 and younger. The facility will provide 22 private rooms will allow patients and parents rather to stay overnight with their children. That will be in conjunction with the outpatient mental facility services offered by Children Minnesota. We have a massive problem coming down the line with mental health, and it is all people, the elderly, adults, and especially children. And I have two friends who work as nurses in mental health facilities. And they have said that unless there is an immediate influx of spending and staffing, that we are going to have a monumental crisis on our hands. And I understand that Republicans might say, well, we're not going to give the money for this or the staff for this. We'll just drug these kids. No. You don't understand. This is not one or two kids. There's child mental health services are something pretty much every school district right now in the state is screaming for. And those are just for the day-to-day kids in a school environment. For the actual treatment facilities, we are overwhelmed. Over-freaking-whelmed right now. We need to have people that instead of talking about, I'm going to take horse dewormer and jam it up my backside, we need to have people that are saying, wow, first of all, get vaccinated, everyone wear a mask. Understand the stresses that have been on children during this time have been immense. My own daughter, yes, was it 2 days ago? She was like, oh gosh, I've just been in my room all day. I got to get out of the house. In some cases, and that's a kid. We went and did the science museum. We did a lot of things over the holiday. You know, it kind of is one of those things where if we're not working with these kids, I mean, this pandemic has been brutal. So please, not only get vaccinated, not only wear a mask, but talk to your local representative. I don't care if they're a Republican. Ask them, for goodness sakes, we need immediate mental health care spending and the encouragement of staffing in this state, or else we are going to have a massive problem, which we already do if you want to know the truth. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Brett, Patrick. Hi, Brett. How are we today, my friend?
Hello again.
Nice Advent candles. How about that?
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Scented Advent candle? No.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I smell piety. tithe. It's always my favorite scent. First of all, can I just say a salute to our friend. We've had her on the air a few times, Dessa. Did you see the picture she posted up on social media?
I did not, no. What did she get posted?
She was trying to put away some merch or something like that. She was standing on a piano bench and went down. And her whole leg just looks, oh, man.
Ooh, ouch.
That's like, you know, like one of those hockey hits. You know, I was like, well, she got into a fight with some Boston Bruins, I guess. but all my best. She's supposed to start a tour today.
Oh, that's not good timing.
I think on the West Coast. And, yeah. She'll be hobbling around, just like Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters. Remember when he broke his leg and they brought a throne out for him in the middle of the stage and he sat on that and he did the show?
That's pretty cool, actually, yeah.
Speaking of the Foo Fighters, are you a Foo fan?
Yeah. I'm not huge, but yeah, I like some of their music.
I love the Foo Fighters. I really do. And it's so wild to go back to look at Nirvana and see Grohl on the drums. And just sort of like, how did you get the, I mean, the band Nirvana was quite good. I mean, they had a lot of depth. They had a lot of ability. And Grohl is just the latest example of that. You know, his own career, you know, as everyone's watching this Beatles thing on Netflix, you see this, you know, his own is just amazing. And, you know, he's, you know, and if Kurt Cobain had stuck around, I imagine he would have had, you know, how many hit albums would he have had by now?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How big he would have been. Yeah. Not that he wasn't big already, but yes.
So are you prepared for the excitement, the pageantry of it all? The Foo Fighters are, you know, they might not be coming here. They announced earlier today that they were going to come and play the bank. Over at Huntington Bank. They're going to play the Gopher Stadium. And they announced it. Yes. Excitement quickly gave way to confusion as they basically watched the just-announced Minneapolis tour date suddenly disappear from the band's schedule. The Foo Fighters revealed details of their Live in North America 2022 tour Tuesday morning. It includes an August 3rd stop at the bank in Minneapolis. Before lunchtime, I mean, this was like 20 minutes from the announcement to all of a sudden I had friends saying, what do you mean it's gone? They basically, the ticket selling website AXS abruptly disappeared, and the band edited its Facebook post to remove Minneapolis from the list. The sudden change, majorly made without explanation, left fans eager, wondering what happened. Apparently, basically the show itself will still happen. They're saying it's just not at Huntington Bank. And the reason why, due to Huntington Bank Stadium's refusal to agree to the band's COVID policies. Really? I over at the U, I thought they were pretty progressive on the COVID policy.
I would think they would be more strict than like the X or the Target Center, being
absolutely.
At the University of Minnesota.
U.S. Bank. At U.S. Bank Stadium. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
They don't seem to really care during the games that much. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised the bank is being such dinkuses on this. Foo Fighters are not going to be able to play that venue. We apologize for any inconvenience. We're working finding a suitable replacement. Play the bank. I mean, isn't that the biggest facility we have?
Oh, now it is. Yeah.
So you'll fill it up. I mean, the Foo Fighters will fill that up. I mean, there's a handful of bands that could do that. Gaga, Gaga would do it. Maybe Coldplay, maybe.
Get some good acoustics at that stadium too. So
really.
You think? I don't know. That's what they were sold it as, at least it's a good concert venue when they were building it.
Well, they're still building it. So.
That's a good point.
They're still going round and round on that one. So there you go. So we'll have to see if they actually do come in to town. But if they don't, God help Bank, because you are going to have a lot of angry fans. Because, I mean, they weren't going to a lot of cities. They were only playing the biggest cities. So the fact that we got a concert tour, a stop here, was pretty huge. And so if the bank, because, well, we don't want to put in a COVID policy, well, you've not done much for your image.
Didn't I read, too, that they haven't even had a concert in quite some time at the bank? So I figure, got to get something there, and now you're going to turn down the one band that does want to play?
One huge band that wants to play. Let's turn our attention towards the West and our fine neighboring state, South Dakota, where apparently somebody likes to spend that money when it comes to the governor's mansion. Little Christy Noem. More than $60,000. I was going to make this an extraordinary story. More than $60,000 has been spent redecorating the governor's residence since Christy Noem moved in nearly 3 years ago. Thousands more for the installation of a sauna. Okay, if you don't put a pool in with it, all you basically have is a lot of sweating, and then you go back to work.
Well, when I think of Christmas, I think of going in saunas.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, the idea of your standard South Dakota man in a sauna. Yikes! No, I don't. I hope they're clothed. A bunch of guys wearing flannel in the sauna. I'd pay money for that. But unless you have built some kind of, I don't know, wash-off device to go along with your sauna, you're doing is sweating a lot. According to the Argus Leader, review of expense receipts associated with the renovations and redecorating of various facilities within the South Dakota Capitol Complex and Pier, going back to January 5th, 2019, the day Noem was inaugurated as the 33rd governor of that state. And that has critics accusing the first-term Republican governor of lavishly spending taxpayer dollars on her personal interests. The bulk of the expenses reflected in 158 pages of receipts and invoices provided to a third-party government oversight advocacy group by the governor's office and later obtained by the Argus Leader are related to modifications, both structural and aesthetic, within gubernatorial facilities on the second floor of the Capitol building. So does the governor live in the second floor of the Capitol over there?
Picturing it like a restaurant where you have the apartment above it. They had to save some money in South Dakota.
So have we ever had a case where someone is like reading a bill on the South Dakota House floor and all of a sudden you hear a... Keep it quiet down there. Some of us are trying to get some sleep.
Or if the governor's loud, you got someone with like reaching up with a broomstick to hit the ceiling. Keep it down up there.
Are they clogging up there? What are they doing? Clogging.
Hey, if there's a plumbing problem in her...
I'm talking about the wooden shoes dancing.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
I don't know. You got to stay fit somehow. Well, and the sauna can only do so much.
That's awesome if it's above the Capitol.
Now I got a mental image of Christy Noem clogging in a sauna. All right. The documents show that most $60,500 has been spent redecorating Noem's state-owned and state-funded peer residence. including more than $13,000 for luxury rugs and tens of thousands worth of furniture, lamps, and chandeliers. The cost of installing a sauna, a small room used as a hot air or steam bath, was not included in the expense documents released by Gnome's office. Gnome's residential creature comforts joined the 2019 installation of a television studio in the basement of the state capitol, renovated from Angela Konecki's governor. This is her story. Governor uses $130,000 to boost national conservative profile and reach South Dakotans. You're telling me that you couldn't? It's South Dakota. Every day is a slow news day. You could have called any news outlet and they would, oh, yeah, sure, we'll come on down and do this. You built a news studio in the basement of the capital of South Dakota. You generally have to have news for to have a news studio. I'm just pointing out a fact here. You put the, this is definitely the cart before the horse here. I'm just going to say this. Sorry, South Dakota. Guess what? They found a beat. Wow. There's your lead story tonight. Beat found in South Dakota. As far as we can tell, questions still remain about our use of a state airplane to ambassador the state at events hosted by political organizations and the National Rifle Association, Turning Point USA, and the Republican Jewish Coalition. Yeah. So apparently she likes to spend the money.
No kidding.
Who? What kind of psychopath gets a sauna and doesn't get either a pool or a good shower facility to go with it? Seriously, what are you, nuts?
Yeah.
come into the governor's office and she's just pouring sweat. She just got done with the sauna.
Maybe that's how you hold tough negotiations. You bring everyone in the sauna and you make them work out a bill.
Clogging, lots of flannel. Yes, yeah, it's a disturbing image of South Dakota.
I got to look up the South Dakota Capitol now to see what this looks like. I'm picturing now.
There's six buildings there. It's Pierre. I mean, have you never been to Pierre, South Dakota?
No, I have not. No, no.
Not the biggest state capital you'll ever see. And I think actually Montpelier, Vermont is the only one that's smaller. I think that's the only one that's smaller.
What's the capital of Montana? That's got to be
Helena.
Okay, that's got to be bigger then.
Helena is, actually. I think it is. No, this is... That's Pierre is there is not much in Pierre. There is not much in Pierre. When Bismarck clowns you, you got an issue.
Well, she's trying to change that at least with all her spending there.
She's definitely trying to do a hiring program with the contractors to build all this stuff for her. So maybe they'll decide to stay. Maybe they won't. It's South Dakota. I don't know.
Well, she's facing that challenger on the right. Money from the construction industry. So there you go.
I'm sure the sauna will help in that. All right. I also just have this mental image of, is her governor's residence on the second floor of the Capitol?
I know. That's what I want to know, too. I hope it is.
Mail, it's like left in a pile in the basement, and you're kind of going through it. Senator, 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 Mom. All right, Senator, 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 Mom. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Brett, stop making fun of South Dakota. Come on, man. We've had these discussions before. You actually have a fine guest coming up right now.
Yeah, Dr. Rebecca Wirtz of the University of Minnesota, epidemiologist, also a data tracker on what's happening with COVID. So we'll be talking about why we're getting a massive spike. I know we generally know the answer, but we'll talk a little about Omicron as well. Omicron. I keep wanting to call it Omicron like it's some sort of – it's Omicron.
Omicron, yes.
Omicron,
and it's not Omnicron where you can go watch those planetarium features at the Omicron. No, it's Omicron. It's a letter of the Greek alphabet.
Indeed, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we'll be talking about that as well and why we're going to probably see more of these variants unless we get the rest of the world vaccinated too. So
don't feel bad. Matt Burke, Johnny Harvard over there, he misspelled it on Twitter last night too. So, all right, here's Brett Johnson with an interview right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. Well, unfortunately, Minnesota has been having a tough time with COVID cases over the past few weeks and even months. In fact, the latest I saw was that intensive care units at 50 of the 68 Minnesota hospitals capable of providing critical care to patients are now completely full. That's according to the latest data from the Minnesota Department of Health. So we're certainly not going in a good direction right now. And joining us on the show to talk a little bit more about this, the data that we've been seeing with COVID in Minnesota and a little bit on Omicron, is Dr. Rebecca Wirtz. She's a University of Minnesota public researcher as she joins us now on the show. Dr. Wirtz, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So my first question, as we look through the COVID numbers in Minnesota, how bad is the situation compared to other areas of the country right now?
Well, it's one of the worst right now. Maybe Michigan is similar to where we're at, but no one else has got most of their ICUs full at this moment.
So why are we seeing this surge in Minnesota? Because people might sit there and think, well, aren't we one of the most vaccinated states in the country? What sorts of reasons are we seeing for this? Are there pockets of unvaccinated areas that are driving the surge? Talk a little bit about why we're seeing Minnesota have such a tough time with COVID right now.
It's such an interesting paradox. You know, even though we're highly vaccinated, about a third of the state isn't vaccinated, and they're incredibly vulnerable. And then we did do a good job early on in 2021 in getting a lot of people vaccinated. But as we've seen, that immunity wanes. And so it's that overlap of the population that's not vaccinated and the population that's was vaccinated in a timely way but hasn't gotten a booster, a third dose yet, that just fuels this ongoing epidemic with Delta, which is very contagious.
So do you think cold weather could possibly play a factor in this as we head into winter? Because I've often heard that talked about, that, you know, once we head into colder weather and people go indoors, that could also be a factor for why we're seeing surges, or could see even more in the future. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no question that we gather together with the holidays and with the colder weather. We're not sitting out on patios at breweries anymore like we were a few months ago. So no question the fact that we crowd together inside makes it more likely that it's transmissible. It's unknown, I think, whether COVID is more transmissible in cold weather per se. We know that's true about influenza, but we don't know that about COVID. But for a moment, kind of contrast, you know, back in the summer, July, August, it was Texas and Florida and Georgia that were having problems then, not parts of the country that were cold, not parts of the country where people were gathering together indoors, other than the fact that maybe it was the height of the summer there and they were gathering indoors in air conditioning. And maybe that's why it faded as the weather turned a little bit cooler down there over the last several months. But no question that we'll see a worse problem in the northern, colder states as the winter goes on.
Another question I have for you is, how much does declining immunity from vaccines play in the recent spike? Because I know you were quoted in the Minnesota Reformer a few weeks ago talking about how it almost is like clockwork there, where basically 6 months after a lot of people were initially vaccinated, we're starting to see our spike. And generally after 6 months, if you've had the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccines, that's when your immunity starts to wane. Talk about that a little bit in terms of, you know, how this could almost be kind of cyclical, where, you know, 6 months after that vaccination, we're starting to see those vaccinations, we're starting to see a COVID spike again.
I think we all had hoped that, you know, we'd get one, two and done vaccinations or injections. And there was concern that immunity might wane, and that's certainly proven to be the case. Whether or not we'll go on to need regular vaccinations, or whether we all should have had counted on having three doses at the start. You know, often for kids' vaccines, we know they need three doses over the space of about 6 months to have lasting and enduring immunity. Whether or not three will do it for us, or whether we're in for, you know, repeated episodic injections isn't known yet.
And talk about this part a little bit too, where, you know, we have a large percentage of the population that is either not getting vaccinated or refusing to get vaccinated. That does create a breeding ground for more of these variants and possibilities for, well, more spikes of people, more spikes of COVID cases, where, you know, if we had people that were, or if we had populations that were getting 80 to 90% vaccinated, we probably wouldn't be seeing these types of spikes. Talk about that a little bit, and the idea that, you know, if we continue to have people who don't get vaccinated, that's how we're going to continue to get these spikes and allow these variants like Omicron to continue to, well, pop up.
Well, and, you know, we have to think, though, about how this extends beyond just the United States. So even if we were 70 to 80 to 90% fully vaccinated across the country, if until the world is vaccinated at high levels, and we don't know exactly what the right number is for, you know, vaccine coverage, but until around the world people are covered, we in the United States remains vulnerable, because these variants will continue to pop up in other places, and we see how quickly and easily they're transported here. So, yes, I wish that we were 100% vaccinated, I wish that it was easy to get everyone vaccinated in this country. I don't think that's going to be possible. And so the next best thing will be trying to make sure that everybody's vaccinated. Those who choose to be vaccinated are vaccinated in a timely way. If we need repeated vaccinations, that those are easily available, and that we turn some of our attention and effort to the rest of the world to make sure they get vaccinated. I will say, given how contagious Omicron appears to be, I doubt that many of those people who are not vaccinated will remain uninfected over the next several months.
And talk a little bit more about the Omicron variant, whether it is Omicron or maybe another infectious variant, at least more so than Delta. What sorts of spikes could we potentially see? If Omicron is only slightly more infectious than Delta, would we see a massive spike, or would it take something significantly more infectious than Delta for us to see we're really in a significant spike in the country and even in Minnesota?
Well, it's a combination of two factors: how contagious it is, that is, how easily it's transmitted from person to person, but then also how much of the immunity that we've all acquired so far, whether it's through vaccination or through exposure to a COVID infection, you know, how protective that is against Omicron. So it's those two important and synergistic factors: contagiousness and immunity or protection against it. You know, if immunity, if we don't have protective immunity, and it is as contagious as it appears, then we're in for a whole nother round of very high, you know, persistent spike in cases until a new vaccine is developed. And you know, as of this afternoon, no one knows where we're at with that. We should know within a week or 10 days at the most, and that's going to determine a lot of what happens over the next several months.
I've always been kind of curious what goes into the nuts and bolts in terms of determining how much more infectious a variant can be, or how well it evades vaccines. Talk a little bit about how that's measured and how we're able to do that so fast, because as you were mentioning, we could potentially have some preliminary data by the end of the week, which sounds like a big scientific feat. So I'm just a little curious about how that's actually done.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting how immunity is assessed. There are three different ways. One is in vivo, that means in living people. I'll talk more about that in a minute. One is in vitro, that means in a test tube. And most recently, in the last 20 years or so, there's something called in silico, which means in using silicon chips and computers to model what we think contagiousness is and protection is. So that, you know, we've all seen this new blobby variant, the Omicron spike protein, which has many new changes in it. People are looking at it structurally in computer models to see whether or not the existing antibodies that we have will plug into the places on this newly mutated spike protein. So they're looking at it in three-dimensional computerized models. They're looking at it in silico. So that's one way in which it's being assessed. The second is to actually take the blood of people who have received vaccines or had prior infections, and combining it with this new virus and seeing if the new virus is inactivated, if the Omicron virus is inactivated in the test tube. And then lastly, they're looking at, particularly in places like South Africa, where there's a large number of cases, they're looking at who's getting infected and under what circumstances, what types of exposures have they had, and how had they been vaccinated, how long ago had they been vaccinated, and assessing the likelihood of exposure and contagiousness in vivo, in real populations, in real people. So there are lots of, you know, all of those things are going on simultaneously with lots of different countries and scientists making an effort to gather those pieces of evidence together.
Speaking with Dr. Rebecca Wirtz of the University of Minnesota, she's a public health researcher. And a final few questions for you, Dr. Wirtz. What precautions should we be taking as we head into winter, and especially the Christmas holidays, when lots more people are going to be traveling, especially if Omicron ends up being, well, a lot worse than Delta, or even slightly worse than Delta? What extra precautions should people be taking compared to maybe what's happening now, where a lot of folks are more comfortable going to restaurants or going out to see shows or going to sports events. Talk about what kind of precautions we should be looking at if Omicron ends up not being a good situation for us.
Yeah, certainly for the next week or 10 days until we have some of those answers, we should be very conservative and thoughtful. Until we know what's going on, we should overdo it. And by overdoing it, I mean, masking in any public place, not going to group gatherings, revisiting how comfortable we are working from home and trying to do that if we can. And then in a week or 10 days, we should have more information about what level of concern we should have. But certainly through the Christmas holidays, we should be masking in public. We should be thoughtful about who we're exposing. If we have people in our households who are vulnerable, older people or, you know, compromised people, we need to treat those folks with kid gloves and be thoughtful about testing, you know, getting tested with rapid tests before we visit them, being thoughtful and careful before we go home for the holidays or over to a family member's house, by being especially cautious in the week or 10 days leading up to that, so that we can go home and eat a meal without a mask on and be relaxed sitting on the sofa and watching a football game at home. But for the next few months between Omicron and just the fact that many people still remain vulnerable to COVID, we need to overdo it.
I want to go back to something you were talking about a little bit earlier, Dr. Wirtz, and with what's going on in the rest of the world and how several of the poorer countries have struggled getting vaccinations, where, you know, we do oftentimes have some of the wealthier countries that have an excess number of vaccines. Are we likely to continue to see more variants like Omicron until we get most of the world close to being fully vaccinated? Talk about that aspect a little bit.
And yes, in fact, that's absolutely true. And so although we keep thinking this is over, it's almost over, or it will be over in 4 months or 6 months, truly until the whole world has got a higher level of protection, it's likely that things like Omicron will crop up over and over again, such that we'll have to kind of reconsider all of our thinking and all of our plans. And so, again, insofar as we all desperately want this to be over, we really need to turn our effort and our attention from a general level of support. We need to advocate on behalf of getting the rest of the world vaccinated, because as we've all said, we're not safe until everybody's safe. So until there's a high level of immunity around the world, then things like Omicron will continue to pop up.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate scenario, and hopefully we can change that. I optimistically say maybe next year, but who knows? It probably could be even longer with the slow rate.
It's hard to hear you say that, but yeah. It certainly is a concern. And I think this Omicron will hopefully accelerate the worldwide effort to get the world vaccinated. So hopefully the slow pace at which things have gone so far won't continue. Now we've seen what can go wrong when people are not vaccinated.
Yeah, it's just tough because, as you're saying, if we let this thing fester throughout the world, that's how we get more of these variants that keep developing. So it's easy to sit there and think, well, we're fine in the United States, or we were fine. But if we allow this thing to keep going throughout the world, that's how we're going to get more variants. And it's just very tough to get people to kind of realize that, well, it's the entire world that really has to take this thing on. We can't go country by country.
Yes, and that's a great thing about this world, that we travel so widely and we blend populations together, and yet it's also the negative consequences, something like a pandemic that won't come under control until the entire world has it under control.
Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Rebecca Wirtz. She's a University of Minnesota public health researcher and epidemiologist. We've been talking about the Omicron variant and some of the data we've been seeing in Minnesota in terms of COVID infections and the recent spike in the state as well. Dr. Wirtz, I really appreciate the time today. Thanks so much for joining me on the show.
My pleasure.
All right, we'll take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Brett there. Fantastic interview. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. We have two stories that are kind of developing as we speak. I'm not going to go through the entire Twitter feed of today in regards to the Potter trial where jury selection started today. But a lot of people are covering it, Unicorn Riot as well. I'm going to go with Rochelle Olson, who is was out there, and just I'll just go through a few here on because they've wrapped up for the day finally at this point. The juror 11 is on the jury. That's four total jurors seated. Now up juror 14. 14 is a university sophomore, tells Judge Chu that he would be unable to attend classes if the Potter jury. 14 also says his biases and sympathies would make him unable to be fair. 14 was sent home. He is not on the jury. 15 is up in somewhat negative impression of Kim Potter. The judge asking if 15 can listen to evidence and decide based on evidence, not some general impressions. 15 says, yes, absolutely. 15 spent a month volunteering for Keith Ellison's campaign in August of 2018. The judge asked 15 if she was supportive of Ellison's campaign. 15 said, mixed. She asked if her to explain. 15 says, no offense, Mr. Ellison. I wasn't particularly about your candidacy. She volunteered a month and went back to school. The defense attorney now questioned 15 and he reads the last page of her questionnaire where she talked about the fair accountability. He asks what she means. He says accountability by the fair rule of law. 15 says Potter's actions seemed careless but not intentional. This is another thing here. 15 says she visited the George Floyd site on the 38th in Chicago on a couple occasions, also protested on the Lake Street. She went to do cleanup and stayed there for the process. Defense says uses its first peremptory challenge on 15. She's excused, not on the jury. So that's it. And that was it. So four jurors seated so far. They went through, I think, seven were turned down and were not part of the jury pool. So a busy day in that case. There also, it should be mentioned that part of the story is today that she plans to take the stand in her own defense. And it's interesting because we talked with Jack yesterday about her and this trial. And there after that, I noticed there were multiple people, and I don't know if this was coordinated or not. My guess is it was, who are out there saying, I don't even know why she's on trial. Well, she shot a guy. I don't know if you saw what happened to Dante Wright, but that should have happened to Dante Wright. And there's also this court of public opinion that's trying desperately to insist that it's very difficult to tell the difference between a taser and a gun. It's not that difficult. And Jack Rice, as we mentioned yesterday, if you go to his blog, he breaks down the differences between a taser and a gun and why anyone who's gone through training would never mistake one for the other. And what's interesting was one guy that was trying to say, well, you can't tell the difference. He didn't have the same taser that Potter had. I remember Potter and her crew had those orange tasers on their hips. He was showing a taser that was pretty much the same exact color of the gun, saying, see who could tell the difference. I'll tell you what, you put a magazine in a gun and you pick that up and you pick up a taser, there's a massive difference. You know right away, oh, that's my gun. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, like I said, I think a lot of people are of the mindset that she shouldn't be held accountable, but she did shoot someone and we've got video of it. So do I think that her sentence should be, do I think she should be found guilty personally? Yeah, I do. Do I think her sentence should be as strong and as deep as Chauvin's? No, I don't. I don't. At the same time, you can't excuse what she did. You can't just say, no foul. No, you can't do that. You've got to have some level of accountability here. President Joe Biden, here's the other story. Biden was in town today. He used, and this is from Brianna Bischbach, our good friend over at the Star Tribune. Biden used his first Minnesota stop since being elected to trumpet the new bipartisan infrastructure law. focused on improving roads, bridges, and public transportation throughout the United States. Speaking at Dakota County Technical College in Rosemont, Biden says he and others in his administration will travel around the country in the coming weeks to highlight how these investments will change lives. The president said the law will help rebuild the backbone of this nation, including making high-speed internet available to every Minnesotan. Biden, the Democrat, signed a legislation into law earlier this month that will bring billions to Minnesota. Prior to president's remarks, billions, by the way, billions are coming to Minnesota. Great deal. Prior to the president's remarks, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz called the infrastructure bill one of the most important pieces of legislation Congress has passed in the last decade. Former Democratic New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landreau was also recently picked by Biden as a senior advisor and infrastructure coordinator, said in a phone interview that Minnesota has 661 bridges and over 4,000 plus miles of highway in poor condition. And some of the funding that's coming down to you guys should be coming down sooner rather than later. Thank you very much. It's very nice of you. Fixing the bridges would be nice. We had one collapse. I don't know if you saw that story. We should be a little bit more intent on this as it is. Hundreds of people gathered across the Dakota County Technical College to protest Biden's visit, ranging from supporters for Trump to Ethiopians on all sides of the country's civil war, asking the president to examine the foreign policy in Ethiopia. Rosemont is the second congressional district represented by U.S. Representative Angie Craig. The Democratic congresswoman is expected to face a heated re-election battle next year as her party tries to keep control of the House and Senate in the midterm elections. By the way, if you've seen some of the early redistricting maps, I think 2 is going to be safe. 2 becomes a much more of a metro area district. Even, you know, it's going to have to. It's going to have to. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Craig welcomed the president to her district, adding the event demonstrates that we're working tirelessly to make good on our promises that we're committing bipartisan bias to get done. Now, before I go into the next statement from this story from Brianna, I want to point out I'm about to tell you probably one of the most ludicrous things I've heard today. And I heard today, in case you didn't miss it, Dr. Oz says he's going to run for, I think it's in Ohio? Is it Ohio? I think it's Ohio.
Pennsylvania.
He's running in Pennsylvania. I could care less. But the reality, well, I don't want to see him in the Congress, but he comes on out. This is Dr. Oz. This is a doctor who does TV shows. Says on the first moment of his campaign, I'm here to fight the elites. Wow, really? Well, maybe you want to go look in the mirror because I can tell you where I'll find the first elites that you can fight. A TV doctor actually starts his campaign for Pennsylvania Senate by saying he wants to fight the elites. Wow. Wow. That was outrageous, but let me bring up the next quote here. So I was mentioning Angie Craig. If you don't remember, Tyler Kistner, he was the Republican that ran against her last election, who failed to unseat Craig in the 2020 election and is running again to try to oust her next year. Said in a statement that the Democrats know Angie Craig is in serious jeopardy of losing her seat in 2022. Let me stop right there. Have you seen the redistricting maps? The first redistricting maps, they're not moving 2 out of the metro area. Au contraire, they're moving a good part of 2 into the metro area, likely. So, yeah, good luck with that, Tyler. Anywho, they're using their deeply flawed infrastructure legislation. Deeply flawed. This is Tyler Kistner saying billions of dollars coming in for bridges and roads is deeply flawed. Okay. But here we go. You ready? Buckle up. They're using their deeply flawed infrastructure legislation as an excuse to bring Joe Biden in to save Craig's floundering political career. Tyler, I'm not sure if you're aware of this. You lost the last election. I know, shock. But when you talk about floundering political careers, the dude that got his caboose handed to him by Angie Craig the last time shouldn't really be talking about anyone else's floundering career. You are about to run in a district you lost, which is going to become more progressive. and you think you've got, this is, okay, wow, wow. I don't know, Dr. Oz, Tyler Kistner, I don't know, one of them said one of the goofiest things I've heard in a while. By the way, Biden won Dakota County by almost 14 percentage points and carried the state in the 2020 presidential election. A little over 1 year ago, Minnesotans voted for President Biden in their hope that he could break through the partisan nonsense in D.C. and get things done despite being in office for less than a year. Biden has already delivered for Minnesotans everywhere, said DFL party chairman Ken Martin ahead of Biden's visit. Minnesota Republican leaders criticized Biden and his party in a Zoom call Tuesday morning. over issues including inflation, energy, the border, and Democrats' legislative goals on Capitol Hill. Republican Party Chairman David Hahn, who, by the way, became the... Have we heard from this guy? Is this the first we've heard from him since months ago he became the head? Wow. All right. No question he's here to shore up the faltering campaigns of Angie Craig and Governor Wall, said Republican Party Chairman David Hahn. But I think the fact that they are choosing to link themselves so closely to the failed policies of Biden presidency are going to mean that all of Minnesotans, they're going to have a clear choice next year. Yeah, I'm going to go with the guy that's rebuilding all the roads and bridges that basically are falling apart. You guys can, good luck with that whole, no, we want worse bridges policy, because that's kind of where you are. The Republicans voted in unanimously, I believe, against... Not unanimously in the Senate it was the Senate, but pretty much every Republican in the state of Minnesota voted against this bill. And now all of a sudden it's a horrible bill. Yeah, say that to the people whose bridges are about to get rebuilt. Where there is criticism of the bipartisan infrastructure law, which Minnesota's four U.S. House Republicans voted against, much of the call blasted Biden and other topics. God, I mean, are these are the clowns that are running around to gas pumps putting those Biden stickers on them. The White House projects that Minnesota will get $4.5 billion for highways, over $800 million for public transportation, $680 million for water projects. Oh, how many Republicans are out there saying, this infrastructure bill is horrible, but are quietly like, hey, guys, you know, I need 3 water treatment plants in my district. Is there any way in the world you could give me some of that infrastructure money? Thanks. And by the way, can we pretend we got it from someplace else? I don't want to have to tell people I had to get the Biden money to fix the water systems. Great. Trust me. Considering the crumbling water infrastructure we have in this country, I guarantee you Republicans are already working back channels to say, sure be great if we could get some of the money for the water treatment plant in my district. $300 million for bridges within a 5-year span. The state also expected to see at least $100 million for broadband. $100 million for broadband is going to take a lot. It's going to get a broadband in a lot of places in this state. And, you know, I want to remind people that the DFL in the state for years has been trying to get broadband border to border. It's the Republicans who keep saying they're for broadband, who keep basically pulling the funding for broadband out of their bills and preventing broadband from being built. Now you have Joe Biden giving us $100 million. That's going to go a long way to having border-to-border broadband in the state of Minnesota, which means job growth in rural Minnesota, which means jobs, better quality of life. All in all, this is a fantastic thing. It's an absolutely fantastic thing. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's come on back. I've got a fun little bit of thing to end the show with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Boebert. And I'll get to that all in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So on Monday, we had Lauren Boebert and Ilhan Omar. We talked about the phone call that Boebert made to Omar where she didn't apologize and then started attacking her again. And the reason why is that apparently Boebert was at some sort of event and she made the argument that Ilhan Omar is a terrorist. Well, she's not wearing a backpack. I think you're okay. And it's like, wow, that's pretty outrageous. that basically say anyone who's a Muslim, if they have a backpack on, you should be scared. But that's not the only time. Story comes out today. Lauren Boebert told a crowd in September. This was part of her shtick. This was part of her campaigning. This was part of her deal. She told the crowd in September that Representative Ilhan Omar did not scare her when the two got into an elevator because Omar wasn't wearing a backpack, a similar racist comment to the one she made last week. The Islamophobic remarker suggests that Omar is a terrorist, could have been armed with an explosive device, was captured in the video by the New York at the Staten Island Conservative Party dinner. A video of Boebert's comments, which include her calling Omar black-hearted and evil, was posted on Facebook following the event. CNN resurfaced the video on Tuesday following Boebert's other racist and dangerous attacks on Omar. One of my staffers on his first day with me got into an elevator with Capitol. At the elevator, we were joined by Ilhan Omar, Boebert is seen telling the crowd in September. It was just the three of us there, and I looked over and I said, well, looky there, it's the Jihad Squad. Ha! The crowd applauds and cheers on the video. In the video, I should say. She doesn't have a backpack. She wasn't dropping and running, so we're good, Boebert added. Boebert would go to repeat the similar story last week, telling a group of supporters in Colorado that the Capitol police officer came running up to Boebert and Omar while they were allegedly in the elevator together. Video of her comments were posted online. By the way, it's a completely made-up story, for sure. And if you're thinking to yourself, these are the only two times she said this, this is her shtick. This is her, when she goes to one of these events, she does this. This is, oh, I got this great story. I'll make it up where Ilhan Omar's there and where she's a terrorist and I stood up to her. And by all accounts, by everyone I've heard from, Boebert is terrified of the squad, AOC and Presley and Ilhan Omar. She is terrified of them. And whenever she sees them coming, she basically drops her head and runs. But doesn't stop her from making up the joke. Well, she doesn't have a backpack. We should be buying, Boebert told the crowd, who drawing laughs. And I said, oh, look, the Jihad Squad decided to show up for work today. Omar said that interaction never happened. I love this line. Fact, this buffoon looks down and she sees me at the Capitol. The whole story is made up. Omar tweeted last Thursday. She thinks bigotry gets her clout. Anti-Muslim bigotry isn't funny and shouldn't be normalized. Boebert's comments drew criticism from some of members of her own party, including Representative Tom Reed, Republican of New York, who called her racist comments a pox on our houses, and from Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, who said the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy should condemn his colleague. On Monday, Boebert called Omar to tell her she had reflected on her comments. That's what she said. I never want to offend someone's religion, so I told her that, Boebert said Monday in an Instagram video recapping the conversation. Omar said Boebert never apologized for the racist comments, so Omar hung up on her. Today, I graciously accepted a call from Representative Boebert in hope of receiving a direct apology for falsely claiming that she met me in an elevator, suggesting I was a terrorist, and for a history of anti-Muslim hate. Omar said in a statement on Monday, instead of apologizing for her Islamophobic comments and fabricated lies, Boebert refused to publicly acknowledge her hurtful and dangerous comments. She insisted on doubling down her rhetoric, and I decided to end the unproductive call. But it doesn't end there. Boebert would go on to repeat the similar story last week once again as well. But an ongoing Republican drama between two other Republicans is just heating up. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who does look a lot like the Slimer ghost from Ghostbusters. That is an image I cannot get out of my head. That is weird. And Representative Nancy Mace reached a new level when Greene took to Twitter to brag that she'd spoken to the former President Donald Trump. The feud began when Mace chastised Boebert for her Islamophobic attacks on Representative Ilhan Omar, which CNN discovered date back months. Omar revealed that Boebert lied in her story about the encounter between the two. It forced Boebert into a position that she had to apologize to Omar, but that didn't go well. Instead of apologizing for her Islamophobic comments and fabricated lies, Boebert refused to publicly acknowledge her hurtful tone, Omar said in a statement. Then there's the matter of Greene coming up against Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who's trying to win the speaker's post before the 2022 election has begun. Greene attacked McCarthy, genuflecting her own power over the Republican Party. This is a man who wanted to be a speaker for decades, said Politico's Rachel Blade. He needs her vote. He needs her support in order to get to the gavel. I think you're seeing in the next few months, you'll hear any time. So needless to say, what's happened here is you have Mace, a Republican from South Carolina, going after Boebert, Taylor Greene saying she has nothing to apologize for, and it has gone spectacularly. But now it's gotten up to where Mace says, well, I've been in contact with the Senate Majority Leader, and Greene says, well, I called my dad. Well, no, she said, I've been spoken to Donald Trump. Wow. That's getting good. Needless to say, none of them want to apologize, but they should because they're all bigoted jackasses. But, hey, that's the Republican way, isn't it? We'll be back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.